As you know, I always like to start these meetings with, first of all, what's on your minds? Anything, any questions about what we covered, on our previous session? So let's start with that, and we'll go to the top of the list with maybe Mario or any of you can chime in. Mario?
Yeah, so I went through my entire book, my advisory book, and
Okay.
kind of mapped out the revenue that I'm generating after our discussion of where my time focus should be.
Okay.
And there's not a lot of revenue.
Okay.
So that's the like my largest client is generating about 8,000 a year in revenue.
Okay.
But then every client thereafter is like under 2,000.
Under 2,000. Okay. Per year in revenue. Okay.
So obviously the goal is to raise the minimums to generate the higher revenue and all that.
Right.
But is should there be like a place where I just draw the line and say, hey, if I want to make X, don't even bother, or do I build it up first? How does that, what is your
Yeah,
thought?
well, remember when we looked at the screens, we said we identified all of the reasons to kind of keep a client. And we got down to having no more than 85 households, but you can have like 100, but pretty much 85. Now, what you do is you go through the 85 and you draw a line. I mean, you want to be identifying your top 20%. Okay. So how far down does your top 20% go? Does it go to 500? Does it go to 400?
Gotcha.
So you're going to take that top 20% of your book, and then you're going to use that at the number of clients and use that as a divisor to determine the average revenue per account. Okay.
Gotcha.
So the average could very well be 500, it could be 400. I don't know. But once you've done that, then we've got to set and establish targets. Now, one of the things I think needs to happen is an adjustment in the thinking and turning you from transactional to asset gathering. Okay? Getting assets, under management. That you can do things with. Now, the insurance business, that's not how they kind of brought up. They brought up, you're brought in to get the transaction done.
Yep.
Okay. And I'm not saying that that's a bad deal, but what happens is people will see you as, yeah, you do my insurance business when I need to do my business. And then that becomes it. But you can also, get more engaged in structuring portfolios if you have special training. Do all of you have a Series 7?
Yep, we all have seven.
Okay. Which means now you can get involved in asset allocation, you can get involved in financial planning, and you probably all have a strength of estate planning. Okay. Which is a big topic down in Florida. Okay. All right. Now, what I need you to do for me, though, is I need you to identify what the absolute minimum in terms of assets that you will shoot for.
So, yeah, is that total assets or is that per client? I was a little
Per
confused.
household. Per
Per
household. Husband, wife, anybody connected with the household.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right.
So then for me, that's 500,000.
Okay. So 500,000. That's your absolute minimum. Okay. Now, I want you to think about what you're going to target as the ideal client. Is it going to be somebody with 750,000? Probably that should be your number, 750.
Okay.
And then we'll work on trying to get ourselves to a million at some point.
Because that's what, when I look at this book, right? Like I said, the top person is 7,000, but then somebody I'm generating 2,000 on, maybe they also have that annuity piece that's generating me other revenue, but I'm only counting the, you know, the advisory business right now.
Okay.
So maybe they have 250 in one, and then they have another 300,000 in annuities or whatever it is.
That's total. Total okay. Assets is what you get to count.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's kind of go through and that's an excellent question. So does that help you?
Yes.
Thinking about your minimum and your target.
Yes.
Or your max for now. Okay. So in a period of 12 months, you know, all those clients are going to be looking at 500 to 750 or more. Okay. Let's go with Brent. Brent, tell me what your minimum max might be. And also if you have some questions about anything that we covered last time.
I'm probably right around Mario and the half million mark. I mean, I honestly don't have a lot of managed assets, probably less than a couple, 3 to 4 million max. So okay. I'm not, you know, I haven't really built that side of the business the way I anticipated. A lot of it has to do with we're constantly looking at like different products and we're not, I don't know, just a lot of different factors, but I would say $500,000 is my goal. And
okay.
I have to do it. I really have to start cutting down my book. Like I have it all printed out next to me and now I just got to go through it.
So now, you know, your challenge is to reprofile clients and determine if they have that capability and then, you know, decide who gets that concierge capability. Okay. Not everybody can get it because it takes time. Now,
the issue I have is I was thinking about that is I can provide a great service, but like even if I have 80 to 100 clients,
right?
It's those 80 to 100 clients aren't going to generate me any like passive income,
okay.
Like enough to feel like excited about.
Okay, so. One of the things I don't do is I don't really get too engaged in your products or your investments per se. But I will say this, that the biggest tickets in the Morgan Stanleys, the Merrill Lynch's, the UBS's are second to die life insurance. Those are the biggest tickets written. And then the second biggest might be still with the estate planning kinds of things. So we're talking about a shift. Now, also from a perspective of recurring fee revenue, you know, it's things that generate a recurring fee revenue that aren't transactional. So if there's a managed money platform at AXA and you start thinking about asset allocation, X amount of dollars goes into managed money. All right. So that produces recurring fee revenue. And that's kind of one of your goals is to, you know, get, I mean, how would you like to have a couple hundred thousand a year in recurring fee revenue? We call that annuitized business, okay, where you yourself are creating an annuity for your practice,
right.
Okay?
Yeah, I have a lot of mutual fund business that's been sitting in A shares or C shares that can definitely be recharacterized to some, you know, fee-based planning. It's just, I have to bring in a younger partner to help me with that.
Okay. Okay. So that's kind of a direction we're going. Now, remember, Rome wasn't built in a day. So we're kind of, you know, going through this. So, you know, don't feel like, oh man, I got the weight of my world on my shoulders. I got to get this. I got to get that. You know, don't worry about it, but begin to start to think that way. So Michael, tell me what's on your mind about anything that we've covered so far. And any questions?
So I took a different approach a little bit to start. So when I cut my book down, right now I'm down to 96.
Okay.
So it took a bit of a time to go from 5,000 plus to 96, but I'm getting there. So
okay.
I looked at mine differently a little bit, and that's what I got to figure out is I looked at it less about necessarily just assets that they had, but clients right. wanted. Right. So right now I pick these clients. Some of them have a lot of assets in there. Some are good centers of influence for me.
Okay.
Or they're potential assets down the road.
Okay.
Maybe I have their insurance assets. I didn't get their investments yet, or I've got their investments, but not all of it, or, you know, whatever it may be. Right. I look in multiple different ways, and that's how I narrowed it down to the 96.
Okay. So you use the screens that we have in our guidebook.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. My goal is eventually to keep, you know, again, and this kind of goes to every single person on this call. You have four people that are in leadership. So,
right.
Majority of our time and energy is spent hiring, training, and developing advisors. So right. We really limit the number of clients that we primarily contact because we don't have enough time in the day to do it.
Right.
So the bigger part of our income right now or long term is supposed to come from, or historically has come from, management income.
And right.
We continue to move up the ladder from a VP to an SVP or even an EVP at that point to run a branch.
Right.
There's going to be less and less time to be able to do that. So we're going to need to shrink that client base.
Right size your book. Right size it so you can grow.
Correct.
So we're on the same wavelength here.
We are.
Okay. Perfect. Lenny, tell me what you've been thinking about. Unmute yourself there.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been scaling my book for a while. So I'm down to about 50 clients.
Okay.
So, you know, my goal would be for each one to have a million of you know, assets under management to get to 50 million. That would be a nice goal to have. I would say out of those 50, maybe 5 to 7 of them have like a million of my target. My minimum is 500,000 like the rest of them. But what are your thoughts? Like, let's say as we build up managed money, you know, obviously when it comes to annuities and life insurance, we are paid a lot upfront on those, but we can also choose to get paid, you know, every month on those instead of an all upfront. Is your thought annuitize those basically too, or?
Well, you know, financially speaking, sometimes you make a decision based on cash flow needs. So, you know, if the decision is on a cash flow basis, you're going to get it up front. If it's not, then, you know, you'll get paid monthly or quarterly, however you want to structure it. So that's an independent decision that you have to make. So isn't there a residual as well?
Not always. Most of the time. You can choose to get paid all up front. So sometimes a client may be an A client, let's take for example, and let's say they roll over 500,000 and we put them in an annuity and we say, hey, for cash flow purposes, we want to get paid up front.
Okay.
I guess I could see advisors on our team saying, well, why would I talk to this person every month? Like, you know, what's the benefit of that? Just your thoughts.
Okay. That is a great question. So let's deal with that question. Why do you talk to clients every month? Okay. The ones that have the potential to provide more in the way of revenue and they have complex issues. So the reason you do that, and we're going to coach you on how to do that, which is you're going to have agendas for clients, which emanate from the financial planning, intergenerational planning process. Okay. So it might be for some, you're going to have topics each month, and you might start writing these down until we get to that section where we talk about the monthly agendas. So an agenda might be, beneficiary designations. Okay. A topic might be long-term care. A topic might be, asset allocation and portfolio management. A topic might be providing an economic overview. What's AXA's thinking in terms of the outcome of the election? What should people be thinking about? What's the risk parameters involved going forward? And what should they be doing for themselves? Okay. So you're going to scratch that into monthly topics. And now we're going to have a list of them in your guidebook that you can draw from. There's mandatory retirement plan distributions. So one of the things that might be helpful is, while you all are somewhat independent, the one of the things that I was thinking is, what if you all were a team? And each of you are relationship managers for each of your clients, but each of you are developing a level of expertise in a number of areas where you're brought in by one of the team members to get something done. So while you all might have a general knowledge of everything, but some of you might be trained more specifically in some other things from an accountability standpoint. I want you to think about that as we begin to start moving forward in this process. Okay. All right. I don't know. Did I answer your question, Lenny?
Oh, I muted myself. Yes.
Oh, okay. Good.
I think, Curtis, too, obviously it's something for us to think about working together as a team, but I think our thoughts are, and you can let us know, is as leaders, we would have specialists on our team to help out with each of those niches rather than of us have a specialist.
Okay.
That's the direction I think we're going towards.
That's fine. So you build each of you, your individual teams around you. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. Let's see. So we spent a lot of time talking about segmentation. You're doing some work, on that right now. And now we're talking about, how do you really communicate what you're doing with these clients? And we had a list of client questions and objections. Why do I want appointments instead of just calling you when I need something? See, right now, maybe they're not seeing any urgency to have that discussion, okay? I bought my insurance, I'm good. I got my investment business, which is going on somewhere else, okay? But where they may have that investment business going on somewhere else, they're not getting a concierge service. So do you all have a separate managed money account? Separately managed money?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would start getting up to speed on managed money. So for the person who's looking for tax-free income, clearly that business in the municipal area is becoming very institutionalized. Now, it's hard to buy individual bonds these days. It's an institutional business. And so determine if you have a money manager or money managers that do that. So you can, you know, offer that up as one of your areas of interest. So it's all of those services. So a couple of the client objections might be, why do I want appointments instead of just calling when I need something? Did you review the client objections and responses? Okay. Then I'm not going to go through them, but I want you to know that that is kind of the rationale and how you can respond to how you're developing this concierge practice around each client. Okay. Let's talk about niche markets. What niche markets do you think you want to target now? Now that we've been into this for second session, I mean, it's kind of fast, but what are you thinking? What do you want to focus on? You got to have a capability in retirees. So that's a given. That's got to be a one, right?
Our goal is to open municipalities, 457 units.
457s. Okay. So that means fire departments, police departments. Okay. So 457 plans. Okay. Very good. All right. So that's a target. So do you all have to respond to RFPs in order to get that business?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's why, right, our specialty, obviously, we specialize in the 403B market with the universities and the school systems. But for us to continue to hire and grow at a large scale, we need to open more units.
Right. Okay. Okay. Very good. So, So we've got these target niches, we've got external niches, and so right now you're targeting, fire departments, police departments, and educational institutions. Now, while you're at it, who's going after the endowment business for these educational institutions? And who is involved in philanthropic services?
So I would definitely say nonprofits would be another one that we want to get into.
Okay. All right. So I'll give you just a quick story. FA, very experienced. I was coaching him. He didn't have the level of expertise in that particular area. And I said, find out within the firm who's got that expertise. And you've got all these relationships, but you don't really know how to do it, how to prepare the proposals and get it done. He landed a $50 million university endowment. Okay, so if the goal here is to see if you can knock out maybe $100 million in assets, you know, next thing you know, you get one or two of those charitable gifting strategies, things of that nature. It makes philanthropic services a really, really big, big part of what you do. Okay, so just an idea. So keep those niche markets in mind. And when you elect to take advantage of a niche market, you got to develop an expertise in it. You got to get read up. You got to get, you know, up to speed on what those needs are. All right. Centers of influence, which we talked about. That's the reason to keep a great client or a client that's not generating enough business. They can refer you to people who might be more affluent. And a center of influence might not even be doing business with you. So keep that in mind. And so what I'd like you to think about is getting 6 centers of influence. Now, if a center of influence can deliver 1 referral per month, that's 72 per year in terms of personal introductions. We don't want business cards. We don't want, here's a name, go call this person. We want personal introductions. Okay. That's one of the client acquisition methodologies that we coach on, which is another reason to keep a client. Now, I'm going to take some time, and we're going to go through a script, and then I'm going to send it to you because you don't have it. It's the second client acquisition methodology is this VIPSA referral model. So I want to fast forward so that you can see what your business should be looking like, okay? You're now organized. Your clients and your prospects are on a regular call schedule on the calendar. So prospects get treated like clients in the way we work. You've elevated the level of service. You're using 12-4-2. You're providing a 1-hour response to problems with a 24-hour resolution, and you're implementing a financial planning process. You're leading with that. And, you know, you don't even have to call it a financial plan. Do you have a roadmap, you know, that's trying to get you where you're trying to get to? Okay. You now have monthly client agendas. Your clients receive an executive summary after each call. So remember, you can't do it with 2,000 people, but you can certainly do it with 85.
Curtis,
questions?
Yeah, real quick. So let's say, you know, we have our agendas and we're going to talk about, you know, long-term care or, you know, some particular need. Do you want us to, like, are we supposed to read about it? Like, we're pretty familiar with long-term care, but let's say, like, something we're not familiar with. Is the goal to bring in an expert on those calls, or is it for us to be well-versed in it and then relay that to the client?
The areas that you don't have expert knowledge in, you bring in a specialist. Okay. If you have, like, I will tell you that, you know, most financial advisors that might be at Merrill or, and I'm generalizing, or Morgan Stanley, UBS, they don't have expertise in insurance. So they're always bringing in a specialist. Okay. There might be one specialist in that area for every 300 or 400 people. So, you know, needless to say, that's something that's not getting done. Also, securities-based lending. You know, they don't fully understand that, or they don't understand mortgages, or all the other aspects of lending to small businesses. So they generally bring in a specialist. And so in those areas that you don't have an expertise in, you bring in a specialist. Okay. So you now have the monthly client agendas. The clients are receiving an executive summary after each call. And the summary says, this is what we agreed to. This is what we decided, and these are the next steps. So what you've done is you've set up the next call. And you can even put in, if next month, we're going to talk about gifting strategies in preparation for your kids' educations, whatever the topic might be for that month. Because what we're trying to do here, from a rationale point of view, is we want these folks to see you differently as having a range of solutions to problems. So when they're thinking about contacting you with a specific problem, yeah, I remember we talked about, and these are educational topics, and they provide that client with a range of solutions. Okay, number five, you've conducted a review or you've done something that provides an outstanding benefit to the client. Now, this is important. Do not give anonymously. That means you took care of something, you reduced fees, the mortality tables changed, you gave them, you know, more coverage for less, for the same amount of money or less money. You did something really, really well. Then you've got to restate that as one of the benefits that you provided them. Because I'm going to set you up to have some things that are going to get you personal introductions. Okay, the second point is you're doing this in a review. So you might have reduced taxes by a specific amount. You might have created a trust to avoid probate. You might have protected the family against the loss of the primary breadwinner. You've grown the assets through portfolio management. You've helped to solidify retirement income in the amount of X amount of dollars each month. And you've saved thousands of dollars in interest payments on installment debt. Okay. So whatever the solutions are you've been providing, don't give them anonymously. It's not like you did it and then you're done. It's like, go back and restate it. Okay. Now, at the end of the review, I'm going to give you a script, and it's called BIPSA, B-I-P-S-A. Okay. So that'll help you kind of understand what that is. So it's like, look, now, Mary, I'd like to ask if there's anything else that you and your family, husband, values in the relationship or in the experience in working with us in the service we provide. And what you want to hear is, you know, I really do enjoy the frequency of contact, the sensitivity to the needs of the family, effective education, service, problem-solving ability. You're a great listener. I like your organization. I like your team. Those are some of the things you want to listen out for. Okay? So what do they value in the relationship? That's the V part of BIPSA. Then the I part of BIPSA is what else might be important to you. They may respond, well, what do you mean? Well, we just want to make sure that we constantly fine-tune our service and capabilities for you, if that's okay. Okay? That's the I part, what's important. And with your permission, I'd like to briefly brainstorm with you. So that's the P part. With your permission, I want to brainstorm. This is at the end of the review. We're always looking for good clients that we'd like to that would like to work with our team. Are we at a point in our relationship that you can enthusiastically endorse me or us? Now, once you've set that up, that's the P part of BIPSA. Now you got to have an introduction process. Okay? Take light notes because I'm going to send this to you. So it's a meeting over coffee, breakfast, or lunch. You bring the individual with you and make the introduction. This is what you're telling the client. I find out a little about them, and we explain who we are and what we do. And at the end of the meeting, we then determine if a one-on-one follow-up meeting with just a potential client is warranted and possible. That's it. No pressure. If there is a follow-up meeting, we explain the 90-day free look. Oh, well, what's a 90-day free look? Well, this is when we give the potential client an opportunity to be treated as if they were an actual client and they're placed on our schedule for contact and follow-up. And prior to the end of the 90-day period, they make the decision if they'd like to work with us. Now, so this is like getting into a car, taking it for the test drive, guy turns on the stereo system, you know, feel that leather, that new car smell, the smoothness of the ride. And that's what you're doing. Except, you know, we do intangibles in our business, right? So you want to determine through 90 days. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't close them in 2 weeks, but you're giving them the 90-day free look. So every prospect is going to be organized into a folder system, just like your clients, using your CRM. And you know each month, oh, I got to make a phone call and give them an update, treat them as if they were a client. So now you've explained your introductions process. You're going to then respond, who in your network of family, friends, neighbors, church members, or business associates might welcome a personal introduction? Okay. And then how would you suggest, that's the S part of VIPSA, how would you suggest we meet him or her? And you listen carefully for the signals. And what you might inject is, what would be your advice on making contact or understanding the needs of Mr. Jones better? Okay. What advice would you give me? And that's the A part of VIPSA. So you're going to close and you're going to say, I appreciate you and the time given to us today. And I look forward to the next call. And thanks for arranging a meeting with Bill. So, and I look forward to our next call. So that is the script. Now, you can own it word for word. You can improvise it, make it into your own words so that you can own it. But that's the VIPSA model. I don't say referral. I say personal introduction. Okay. All right. Okay. Now, the other thing I'm going to send you is I'm going to send you an article on niche markets, because we covered that. And what this is going to do is give you a sense. Have you ever walked into a meeting and then you walked out and then feel like, God, I don't know if I really connected with this person? Well, part of that, we've all done it. Part of it is you didn't hit on any pain point that prospect might have been feeling, okay? If it was a business owner, he's trying to keep his cash flow going. He's trying to protect key employees. You know, he needs to fortify his lines of credit. You know, his business is his biggest asset. You know, he wants to protect it. So identify the pain points that you're looking for. Now, let me stop for a moment because I'll send you this article. Let's go back for a moment. Any questions about VIPSA and where we're headed in terms of how we're going to be organized and prepared to be able to receive new clients? Any questions?
Nope.
No, okay. I think we just got to continue to evolve the way we do it.
Yeah. Makes sense? Does it seem like something that you can incorporate with what you do?
very much.
Okay. Lenny, do you want to talk to Lewis about this replacing the 3-card system or no?
No, Brant's making a joke where our managers, they do the old life insurance where they hand out 5 different cards when they're done meeting someone and saying, who within your network?
It's very antiquated. We knock at it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what we do is we just eliminate all that BS and all of the tracking stuff, and we go right for the personal introduction.
For sure.
And because it's a center of influence that you're already meeting with on a monthly basis, they like you, you like them, they're going to personally introduce you. Yeah, I used to, go to the play golf. Well, I still play golf, but I go to the starter and said, set me up with whoever you want to set me up with. Preferably, these are people in business, they're lawyers, they're doctors. And he would do that. And by the end of the round, I think I had a pretty good relationship with those people. And I'd be bringing in new relationships into the office. Okay. So that's what you're doing. Getting personally introduced by
Curtis.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, with like Merrill or UBS, are they responsible for a certain amount of assets or just assets to bring in, or like can they like get a certain minimum? Like, let's like Supernova, you're always getting new clients, or maybe you're concierge, maybe you're happy with your 50, you're making enough money. Kind of curious, like with them, like are they always trying to generate new business, or like
they can plateau? They have key performance indicators, metrics, and I'll divide them into 2 components. One is they are all asset driven. That is the mainstay of their business. Typically speaking, every dollar of assets generates like a 0.80 velocity rate up to 1%. So if a person has 100 million in assets at 1%, they're generating $1 million worth of production at generally like a 45-48% payout rate, depending upon where they are. So that is how they drive it. Okay. Now, once they have the assets, they feel that they own the relationship. And if they own the relationship, the next component is to make sure that they have 6 services. In marketing parlance, if your client has 6 services with you, they are reluctant to ever leave you. Now, what are the 6 services? It's a plan. Could be their cash management account, their IRA, their insurance, long-term care. So 6 services means, and we did these studies a long time ago when I was the national sales manager, and they still exist today. 6 capabilities, 6 services that you deliver means that client will never leave you. When you only have 2, they're subjected to maybe go to somebody else for the other services. So keep that in mind. That if you don't have all 6, they're doing business with somebody else. So that's really where the war is. Now, it took them a while to get there because, remember before they got to holistic wealth management, they were stockbrokers, then account executives, then financial consultants. Stockbrokers, they had 1 service or 2. What stock do you want? What bond do you want? That was it. Okay. So let's take the remaining part of the time I want to touch on building a team structure, which is helping you identify the five-star leadership model. And essentially, we're breaking this down into two categories: the client-centered and then the team-centered approach. So the client-centered approach is you've got a director of planning who's accountable to make sure that every client has a plan. The director of plan implementation who oversees the investment process. The director of brand who is making sure, and that could be Gina, for example, who's making sure that all clients are scheduled for their monthly call and they're getting the 1242 service, rapid response, and a folder. Those are all client-centric roles. The team-centered roles are the director of growth and marketing. They hold the team accountable for implementing acquisition strategies like your COIs, your 90-day free look, you know, that type of thing. And the director of leadership serves the team as their kind of guiding light, helping them stay focused. We got a plan. We got a strategy. Are we sticking to it? Okay. Now, let me stop for a moment. Sometimes on teams, people may carry one or two of those roles because the team isn't fully built out yet.
So, Curtis,
go ahead. Yeah.
Director of growth and marketing.
Right.
That could be an asset gatherer.
That could be an asset gatherer, too. Yeah, that involves asset gathering.
So is that somebody you pay a salary? Is that somebody we bring on as an advisor that's splitting in the revenue?
That's an advisor. See, in this scenario, the team, when the team is succeeding, everybody is succeeding. And everybody plays a part in the revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, in some teams like the junior partner, the senior partner might be getting 70% of all revenue. The junior partner might be getting 25%. As he begins to get better at what he does, then he gets bumped up to maybe 30. The CA gets a quarterly bonus, the client services associate. So she knows that if she's driving something and it works for the team, then it's going to be good for her. Or you may have two junior partners. Okay. That is one aspect of what a team might look like.
So like right now I have a person that anytime I do a new business, he sends the application. He takes care of getting everything done from start to finish. And he also manages the portfolio.
Okay.
But he gets 20%.
Okay.
But I'm not getting anything when he's bringing anything in.
Okay.
So how do I maximize that type of relationship where, you know, maybe, you know, when they're bringing something in, I'm getting 20, but when he's bringing something in, like the reverse, or is that not work?
Well, what he's trying to do is get to a point where he becomes a real equity partner in the total business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's a key relationship manager on relationships that he brings in. you're a relationship manager on the relationships you bring in, and then you have a pool of relationships that you work on together. Okay. He is developing, he's got an expertise in portfolio management. So every time you turn a portfolio over to him, he runs with it, he puts it together, does the models, so on and so forth.
Yep.
Okay. And then you have your compensation scheme for him. Okay. Now, I think it's probably important that if it's not going to be too overwhelming, is I want you to grab the book, Supernova Advisor Teams, and I wanted to work on teaming while I'm going through Supernova. That's not too overwhelming. And what I'd like you to do is just read up to the first chapter.
Okay.
Okay, because this is going to, because Supernova in itself only touches the surface on teaming, but because you guys are in a leadership role, I want to really fortify that.
So just read stepping out of your comfort zone?
Yeah, just get up to the first chapter.
Okay. Right.
And each week we'll add one. You can go as far as you want, but we'll just kind of cover what your discoveries were in the first chapter.
Okay.
Okay. Now, we've got...
Grant, I think Andrew might have a copy you can steal.
I think he has a couple in his office.
Okay. All right. So, again, to reiterate, the director of planning, you know, he's like the CFO for the clients. He or she could possibly be a CFP on the team. They might be involved in multi-generational planning. They're in charge of client segmentation. They report each week on the progress toward creating the ideal client model. Okay. The director of planning, of plan implementation, this is the doctor. He's getting the history. He's doing the diagnosis, determining what needs to be done, where the gaps are in that client's situation. The third star is the director of brand. The idea here is to make sure that the concierge service is being delivered to every relationship. Okay. And they're accountable. How are we doing on our rapid response? How are we doing on segmentation? They make sure that the contact ritual is being adhered to. And we got two more to go. The fourth star is the director of growth. Now, they're in charge of making sure that you all are implementing the growth strategy. The concept of 96-4-2-2-1. We haven't gotten into that, but we talked about the 90-day free look, six centers of influence. There's also a four-member mastermind group, two community board positions, two niche markets. That's what that means. Okay. Now, I'm not expecting you to have all this done in a period of three sessions. It's going to be ongoing that we're working on this. Okay. All right. And then the final kind of star here is leadership. And, you know, it's this kind of the servant leadership model. And I described that in the book as well, where, you know, we're all here to serve. And if we serve, people are going to give us an enthusiastic endorsement. Now, what we'll do as we get into this, and we'll talk about it more in the review in the next session, is this whole idea of a game board and a scoreboard, which is going to give you the ability to track how you're doing in these areas. Okay. So it's not like just talking about them. It's like, well, how am I measuring up? Am I doing what I say I'll do? If I said my goal was to get 4 plans done and I only got 2, what happened? We didn't send out the meeting notice to the client that the call was taking place 3 days before. We're not following up on the executive summary. Okay. All right. Let me stop right there. Anybody feeling overwhelmed at this point?
No, it's great.
Okay.
I think it's great. It goes to show just how much progress we can make. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you all can literally be the poster child inside AXA.
Oh, just, and then Curtis, sorry, it's that we changed from AXA to Equitable.
Oh, okay, Equitable.
Yeah, I know we still say AXA all the time, but we're okay. Like hard on That's us now cool. not to say it. So
when we send our notices out, we say Equitable though, when we put the notices to you. But thank you. Yeah.
You know, looking at, I think a big thing for us is we never really focused on monetizing our business outside of managed money. And that's a mistake. Yeah. Right. And that's something that we train people to gravitate towards too slowly. Right. So like, you know, we need people to want to make more money, and the easiest way to make more money on an annual basis is to have cash flow that's coming in on a regular basis, right? Because then you could continue.
Exactly.
So I think this is great. I think the pieces of the team are going to help us for recruiting.
Right.
So as we learn more about that, I think that'll help us, because if we can recruit all of a sudden, you know, an extra 3 people to each successful advisor we have, you know, we'll blow up quickly, which would be amazing.
Yeah. You know, on those lines, you know, I started looking at the gaps in some of the businesses I ran, and I started bringing in lawyers. I started hiring CPAs. I hired people who had tremendous networks but didn't know what to do with them, and had them become the basis of forming teams.
Mm-hmm. So guys, I have to drop off. I'm sorry. I have a 1 o'clock meeting.
Well, we're done. I appreciate everything that you all have been through, you know, to this point. And we'll conclude the call.
All right.
Thanks, Curtis. This is really helpful.
All righty.
I'll see you Friday.
Surely.
See you Friday.
Bye-bye.